Welcome to Woven in the Body, a podcast dedicated to unlocking the stories held within our bodies and awakening a new paradigm of consciousness. I'm your host, Christiana Dykman, a therapist, spiritualist, mother, wife, and an Aries passionate about shifting humanity's perception of who we truly are and what we're capable of achieving. We provide mentorship for professionals in the fields of pre and perinatal psychology, coaching, and the somatic healing arts. To explore the full range of our offerings, including classes, retreats, and events, visit us at www.theflowerofliffoundation.com. Don't miss out on our upcoming events and bonus content. Sign up for our newsletter on our website. Now, let's dive into today's episode.
Okay, welcome back. This is part two of our episode two, Why Your Birth Story Matters. I know we were going to continue on with Ovi, but she had some family situations come up, and I thought it would be a great opportunity for me to let my listeners or audience know a little bit more about my personal story and what got me into this work and how I was awakened to the fact that your birth really, truly matters and sets the stage for your entire life, especially with your physical structure in your body, your beliefs, your hopes, your fears. Like, so much starts at this early stage when we're in our mothers. And one of the most eye-opening experiences I had was when I became a mother and went through this personal transformation myself. So I thought it would take some time, this podcast, to tell you more about my first child's birth and also how I helped to repattern it using ritual and ceremony, a lot aspects that used to be present in birth, and also even inviting in more as we are growing in our own consciousness and evolving as humans. So let's begin. I never questioned the nature of birth, not really. I was born into a system myself, a system that medicalized birth, it standardized it, it sterilized it. And so why would I have ever known anything different? It wasn't until I became pregnant with my daughter that I was initiated into a journey that I could only describe later as a descent into a kind of hell. One not paved with fire and demons, but with fluorescent lights, sterile environments, instruments, and silence where there should have been ceremony or some sort of deeper intimacy. And this journey that ultimately cracked me open, not just as a mother, but as a seeker, a healer, and a woman hungry to remember what had been forgotten. When I got pregnant, I didn't even know my own body. I had been on birth control since my early teens. I didn't understand my ovulation cycle. I couldn't tell you what my body was doing at any given phase of the month. My first language really was disconnection that I was blind to. And this disconnection was from my womb, from my nature, from my lineage. No one had talked to me about birth, not really. My stepmother did when I had turned 12 and I was beginning to menstruate, and she bought me this book and I thought it was wonderful. She spent some time with me, but my actual biological mother had buried those stories under layers of pain and even sarcasm. My own birth story was silenced or framed as disappointment when she would describe it or claim amnesia that she didn't remember. My father, she had always told me, was the first to hold me before she did. And that fact alone, that she emphasized this over and over again, seemed to symbolize everything. Distance, rupture, grief. But we never really talked further about it. And there certainly wasn't any sort of sacred vocabulary incorporated around when I came into the world. So when I found myself pregnant, and it wasn't a planned pregnancy. In fact, I considered abortion. I was really in a dire situation at the time. I didn't have that much money. I didn't have a partner I could trust. He was very dysregulated. He was an alcoholic. We worked in the restaurant world. I was a sommelier. I had been in the wine industry for a number of years, which turned out to be a perfect place for me to numb all of this that I carried inside. And the foundation from the very beginning of the pregnancy was fractured. So at that abortion clinic, when they told me I was too far along, that I was 15 weeks pregnant, I decided I'm gonna carry through with this. So I did, and that decision wasn't easy. And it certainly didn't come with a lot of flowers and celebrations. I had to break the news to my parents. I had to change situations at my work. There was, my life literally turned upside down in order to bring in this little girl, my daughter. And what I didn't know then, but know with certainty now, is that from that moment forward, my daughter was absorbing everything, every thought, every moment of despair, even joy, every cortisol spike. Yet she was drawn to me. She came to me and chose me as her mother. So I guess I had something going on, which always makes me feel very humbled. But every unmetabolized trauma in my nervous system, she inherited like you would blood or bone. The womb itself wasn't just a place of growth for her. It was a classroom, and it was a battlefield. It was a prayer unanswered and a whisper from the beyond, a calling to awaken me, actually. Throughout my pregnancy, I was extremely overwhelmed. I also gained 75 pounds. I had liver issues. I had constant itching in my legs, especially at nighttime. I was borderline gestational diabetes or diabetic, but no one seemed concerned. That's just pregnancy, they'd said. No one told me that I could calm my body or how to nourish it with herbs, how to prepare for the threshold I was about to cross. No one told me that even this was a rite of passage. It was just more like mechanistic, like, you, okay, here it is. Here's the facts. Now get through it. My prenatal visits were just the same. They were very procedural. I would have a weigh-in, a urine sample, a 5-minute chat with a doctor who barely knew me. There was no bond, no witnessing. I really did feel very alone, floating in a sea of protocols with no anchor to anything sacred. I did start reading a great deal, although I would fall asleep after I would read a couple of pages. I would read a lot of scripture. That somehow I was called to that. It helped give me some kind of comfort at that stage. I also had a dog that I walked a great deal. And when I became pregnant, before I discovered I was pregnant, my dog actually had started sleeping up against my belly, which I've always believed that Stella, that was her name, Stella, she knew I was pregnant well before I did, that she could smell the change and sense the baby. And she was very protective of Audrey, even then at that time. So it was like an angel in the space. Before I even knew, the dog knew, and the dog loved her. And that was a very bonding thing to help her through those earliest times. Especially through my rage, I was so angry. I lived with rage under my skin. It was one of the reasons why I fueled the numbness through drinking alcohol. It would help calm the rage sometimes. Although I once screamed at a woman in my building who was mistreating my dog. She was actually, we were down in the laundry room, and she had made it very clear that she had lived in this building long before they allowed pets, and she didn't like pets. So she was walking by and she tossed a glass of water on Stella. And I immediately turned around and started screaming at the top of my lungs. I almost choked the lady. I was completely out of control. And this was while I was pregnant. My hormones were definitely all over the place. As anyone who's been pregnant knows, there's a lot of hormones, ups and downs. And after that instance with this woman, I could barely settle my body for hours afterwards. I was so dysregulated beyond words. And all the while, my daughter was in this space, learning about the world that she'd be born into. And what was this? I know now, like from how I had restructured a lot with my second child, for her, it certainly was framed with more danger, much more volatility, and even this feeling of abandonment, especially with the abortion ideation that I went through and how I felt abandoned from even my partner, her biological father, and then the birth. So she was breech. It was right up until the final days. I had been to my doctor's checkup. He had said that she was face down. Everything was good. So my parents were there. We were waiting. We were walking every day around Washington, D.C. It was definitely warm and hot. And we were just waiting to go into labor. And then I sensed something was wrong. I called the doctor and I said I hadn't felt her move in a while. And he was like, you should come in and we'll do an ultrasound. And sure enough, they did the ultrasound and they discovered she was breech. So they no longer offered me options. There was no midwife option to step in with, hey, maybe we could work this out. We can have this baby breech. Or there was no option to speak with a doula. I didn't know even what a doula was. I didn't know that there are baby whisperers, are people who could actually communicate or talk to the baby and let her know that it's okay to turn and even envision this is what happens if you don't turn. So there was no communication with her. I didn't actually speak to her. I did put my hand on my belly a lot and I would rub my belly, but I didn't directly communicate with her like I know that you can do now when I'm working with my own clients. So we just went forth with scheduling a cesarean and they cut me open. I didn't prepare her for what was happening. I didn't talk to her, like I said earlier. I didn't tell her what was coming. I didn't even know I could. So I remember being shook, like on the table, like the table rocking back and forth when they yanked her out of me, because that's exactly how they have to take quite a lot of force to grab a baby from a cesarean section and remove them from the uterus. So she was yanked into this room under surgical lights and surrounded by strangers. There were a lot of people in the room. There was no music. There was no prayers. There was no warmth. It was an immediate taking her over to the little table where they were examining her. And I remember at that very moment, they had told me that babies can't see when they're born, that their eyesight hasn't developed enough. But she turned her head and locked eyes with me while they were cleaning her. And she smiled, which is what gave her a 9 in her APGAR. The fact that she had this APGAR scoring that they give to babies, she got a 9 out of 10. And one of the extra points was because she smiled. And in that moment that she smiled, I saw her for the first time and I began sobbing, but yet I wasn't sobbing from joy. It was more of like this aching grief mixed in with joy, like how all of this happened in that moment. There was this clear, sacred connection with her, yet it was so incongruent with what was happening in the space and with what I had been through to get there. And these tears that rolled out of me were really a grief for all the intimacy that I had denied, the sacredness that had been stripped. And I had no language for what was lost. I only had tears. I was so numb, I didn't even realize that what I had lost and where the tears were even coming from. So the aftermath of the birth was even harder. She was colicky. She couldn't breastfeed. She turns out had a tongue tie, but nobody was talking about tongue ties at that age. And even now, I don't even want to get caught up about tongue tie. I didn't realize the fascial restrictions that she had in her body from being breached, from being in the womb third trimester, from going through a traumatic surgery. I didn't understand like this whole, the body keeps the score. Of course, breastfeeding, like moving her tongue was a whole body event. I didn't know that. No nurse was explaining this to me. And even when I went to these breastfeeding consultations, she would breastfeed. And we'd be in this situation that was like glorious and in flow. And then I'd get home and then there would be no success with breastfeeding. And it was just so heart-wrenching. In those first few weeks, I struggled so much because I had so much milk, but she wasn't latching. And every attempt was painful. My nipples were raw. My body was exhausted and broken. She wasn't sleeping at night. It was a crazy time. And all this while, she was expressing this anger, even from the beginning when we had moved back into the recovery room and they began to bathe her. She turned purple. She was so furious at this bath. And I saw the rage in myself in her cries, but I wasn't attuned. I really didn't understand that, oh my gosh, she could rage from my rage. And it was even deeper than that. It was like a lineage rage of what had come through with my ancestors and my mother and her mother and where they had lived and the hardships that they had endured. So my stepmother commented that she'd never seen a baby with a temper like that. And I knew it wasn't a temper. It was trauma. It was the shock of this sacred being entering a world that had forgotten how to receive her. And looking back, I realized I wasn't just giving birth to my daughter. I was birthing a new awareness, a fierce remembering. Her arrival cracked open a path I didn't know I was meant to walk. One that led me to somatic healing, to psychology, to sacred arts, to this very moment where I'm here now telling this story, not just for her or for me, but for anyone who's been told that birth is just a medical event, or not even been told, but only approached with the option of medical birth, that emotions don't get really attuned to, that trauma doesn't begin until after you're born. These are myths. These are falsities. And I want to shatter all of this because I know now the story begins far earlier. And if we dare to listen to it, if we dare to reclaim it, we can rewrite the way we welcome life into this world. And just pausing there for a moment with that possibility, that hope, before I dive into explaining the aftermath, my postpartum, which I know now is even more critical for most women because we don't have postpartum care in our system. It's really, I was a mother in a system that forgets the mother. So after the birth, I was sent home with a baby that I loved more than anything and a body that felt broken in every way. I kept asking for help. My doctor looked me in the eyes and said, "It will get better." And that was it. There was no map. There was no guidance. There was no inquiry into what was actually happening in my nervous system or hers, why she was crying so much. I got her days and nights are upside down, and that's normal for babies. That was one of the reasons why I was told that she was crying and screaming so much. I went to see three different lactation consultants. None of them could help with what was going on with my body or explaining the process of how my body is ridding of all these hormones, what I could do to naturally help myself go through this huge adjustment period. So no one person could reflect back to me what was truly going on. No one understood that the story of my stress had embedded itself into my milk, my skin, my voice, my sleep, my every cell, and it was embedded into hers. I was dying on the inside. That's not a metaphor. I was spiritually, emotionally, and physically unraveling while trying to care for a baby who could not settle. She was colicky. She cried for hours. I held her and rocked her and tried every trick the internet could offer, but nothing worked. And still, every time I looked at her, I loved her. I truly loved her with a fierceness that scared me. I just didn't know how to hold us both. And the amount of strain on my nervous system was unbearable. And instead of support, oftentimes I got shame. My mother-in-law would say things to me like, "My daughter-in-law isn't having sleep issues with her baby." This was some kind of competition. Like my struggle meant I was failing. I wanted to scream. Does that mean I suck? Am I a failure that I can't breastfeed or that my baby doesn't sleep well? So this judgment, in many ways, we won't go into all the stories that I would hear, but it was relentless. The unsolicited advice, the thinly veiled accusations, "You should try this. Just let her cry it out. She needs to learn that she can't be spoiled." It was like over and over these little comments. So I would try. I tried. I left her alone in her crib. I shut the door. I sat on the floor sobbing as she screamed louder, longer. Everything in me knew that this was wrong. My body knew, her body knew, but I didn't know what else to do. That's what people were telling me to do. I didn't know that I had permission to parent differently. I didn't know that being responsive wasn't spoiling her. It was saving her. Sorry. I didn't even know that my own birth story was completely activated in this time. How my mother held me or didn't. How all of this was tied into the same thread. So we just went through so much stress in that first year. And I remember her ear infections came on hot and fast after one ear infection after another. And I gave her antibiotic after antibiotic, because you go to the pediatrician, but you have an ear infection. Here's an antibiotic. I blew up her tiny gut without even realizing it because I trusted the pediatrician. I didn't know that there was another way. No one told me that you could put warm olive oil in a baby's ear, that olive oil itself had antiseptic properties, that you could even buy infused oils like garlic mullein, like they make it just for that particular, for swimmer's ear or for babies. Like this gentle ancestral medicine that helps drain inflammation and soothe their little bodies without wrecking their immune system. No one told me. I wasn't taught and I didn't remember. So when my second child was born, I swore I would do it differently because we had a very similar birth. It was actually more traumatic, my second cesarean. And I saw all the signs, like all the things that had happened to my daughter were happening in my son. And at that moment, I knew this is it. I have to do something different. And when he got sick with his first ear infection, and he was 3 months old, something like that, I was prepared. I went into the pediatrician's office, not knowing what was wrong. He was fussy. He had a fever, and they had the tool that I didn't have. I bought it. Like I went out and bought that little gadget that you use to look in the ears and in the mouth myself after this doctor's visit. But then when they diagnosed that he had an ear infection, I was like, okay, I know I'm going to look for different ways. And I told the doctor, I'm going to apply olive oil. And the doctor was very dubious and sure enough, very disapproving. If this were my child, she said, I would be horrified that you're not giving them antibiotics. You're harming your baby. That's what she told me. You're harming your baby. I just stood there. I took a breath and I said, thank you for the diagnosis. Now I know what's going on and I will go handle it. I went home. I warmed some olive oil, nice olive oil, bought some good quality grade. I held my baby and I whispered to him while I dropped this little ear, like a little drop into his ear. And the moment the olive oil hit his ear, it was like instant relaxation. The pain softened, inflammation ebbed. Within 30 minutes, he was already more at ease. rather than waiting for the 24 hours, the antibiotics to kick in. There was no gut damage, just warmth, just care, and trust in my instinct. I never used antibiotics on him again. I never needed to. That moment changed something in me. It was the first time I looked back at the system and I said, I choose not to comply. I choose something different, and I want to do something older, deeper, wiser. And that's what this story is, not just about the trauma, but about the reclamation, this reclaiming my memory of who I am as a mother, as a woman, because I do know what to do. And if I don't know what to do, I have the resources to research it and find out, because information is at the tip of our fingers all the time. We just haven't been mothered ourselves in the ways that would have taught us. At least my story, I wasn't mothered in that way. And now I'm remembering one choice at a time, one oil drop, one midnight rocking session, one whispered apology to my baby for what I didn't know, but what I'm awakening to. This was an initiation for me. And they say shamans are initiated by near-death experiences, like getting struck by lightning. This was my gauntlet. This that I survived through bringing children into the world, raising a daughter as a single mom. This was my initiation into shamanism. And that just means a deep knowing and my connection to the natural world, to the earth, and how far I had fallen away from this knowledge. And what I came to understand after witnessing the profound dysregulation in my daughter's body after her birth was that birth doesn't begin at labor. It begins in the body and the psyche of the mother. It began in me long before I conceived her, and it extended deep into the unconscious layers of my story. My daughter's experience, she illuminated the places in me that were still unhealed, still holding survival energy, unresolved grief, and even my unmet needs. And we explored that in this part one with meeting our emotional needs. So every time she would erupt something inside of me, it would give me a lantern, something to work with, something to explore. Like, why am I getting so upset here? What is it about my story that is lit up in this moment that I can work on that to heal in order to help heal her, ease her pain? And it was through her that I began to recognize how deeply a parent's nervous system imprints the physiology and spiritual orientation of a child. And this realization led me to a deeper inquiry. How do we prepare the body, not just physically, but emotionally, energetically, and spiritually, for the sacred task of welcoming a soul? And this is my life's work now, like how we can help prepare people and healing their nervous systems. This is why this podcast isn't just for parents. It's for the collective. It's for any human that wants to step out onto a new path, out of these patriarchal systems and onto a system that understands you as a unique, natural being. That you bring gifts to this world. And it's the heart of our work at the Flower of Life. We guide people into their own inner terrain through this process that we explored, the inner child journey. And you're going to see in our next episode 3, the real like stuffing, like the actual demo of Emily and I, my other working colleague, on the set of techniques that view our emotions as more than psychological data points. In our framework, emotions are spiritual messengers. They're pointing towards what is fragmented within us and calling us home to coherence. So the concept of the inner child, while rooted in modern psychology, it really holds profound spiritual implications. It invites us to listen to the echoes of unmet needs from our earlier years and to reparent ourselves with compassion, conscious attention, and strategy to how to meet these needs moving forward. And when we do this, we don't just heal our past, we create new patterns of regulation, of presence, of alignment with our higher selves. And this work becomes especially vital when we step into the role of parent, our guardian, or just a citizen in human society. Our nervous systems become the first environment that people experience. Just like this first environment in the womb, then through every moment of attunement or rupture that follows, the more we return to our innocence, the more we can hold the innocence of others. The more we understand the language of our own emotions, the more fluently we can support others. This is why we teach that the inner child is not a remnant of the past, but it is a sacred compass of right now in the present. And it's showing us the way forward, not only for our healing, but for the possibility of birthing a more conscious, soul-attuned generation. And this is where I'll pause, because I want to really soak that up. And switch for a moment about this ritual. I've done a lot of birthing healing for my daughter in an indirect way, if that makes sense. My daughter has been she's a Taurus. She's very stubborn when it comes to doing healing work on herself. And especially for her, it's a otherism for her. It's a way of isolating her more when I'm like, oh, let's heal from your birth. It wasn't organic for her. Others it works for, but it really made her feel like something was wrong with her body. So I had to really embrace doing more on myself. The more I worked on myself, the more faith I had that things were shifting in my family field. So rather than me being the parent to take my child to therapy, I was the parent who took myself to therapy. And when I did more therapy and I did more birth healing on myself, or diving into my soul, studying the mysteries, studying spiritualism, I healed her. The more I would see her become confident in herself, it was so amazing to see this quantum aspect of healing and how it does really begin with you. And if you start with yourself, it sends ripples of information into your field. So here's one of the ways that I indirectly healed her birth, recognizing that birth is a rite of passage and that we go through numerous rites of passage as human beings in our life. And I would even argue that we go through 7 major rites of passage, and we won't name them all here, but one of them, certainly for girls, is menstruation. And for boys, it is coming into puberty. It's entering into manhood. But if you have ruptures in any threshold moment of your life, it will continue and echo into other thresholds. So if I was going to help heal her birth, which was this rite of initiation into the world, I could do it when she was going to have her period. And this all came about in a really interesting, synchronous, divine way. And I'll share it with you now and invite others that, you know, you can do this as well, like through other, like getting married. For your first time, having sexual intercourse is a rite of passage. Becoming a mother or a parent is a rite of passage. Entering into your sage time or your chronism for human beings, this is another rite of passage. But I'll share my story with my period myself. I got my first period on my 12th birthday, which was April 12th, 1993. I still remember how excited I was. And at that age, there was this unspoken initiation happening among the girls at school. You knew who had started their period. And if you hadn't, if you hadn't started your own period, you were still on the outside of this invisible sisterhood. So when mine arrived, I felt like I had finally been welcomed in. I had read so many books already, like Judy Blume comes to mind, and Dear God, This Is Margaret, stories about girls at that threshold. So I was ready. So I thought. But while I was emotionally eager, I wasn't prepared, not really. My mother had never spoken to me about menstruation. There were no conversations about what was happening in my body, no affirming words about the power of becoming a woman, no context for how sacred it could all be. When I ran outside in that moment with this pure elation to share the news with my mother, I remember she was planting trees in the backyard. And I remember the sting of her response. She looked at me with disdain. She rolled her eyes and said something like, "You'll certainly learn soon enough how miserable it is." And her reaction was such a slap of shame in a moment of innocence. It was a stark contrast to the joy I had been feeling just moments before. So that memory stayed with me. It really left a subtle imprint, but profound, not just about periods, but about womanhood and embodiment. And now here I am at 43, and I hold a very different relationship with my cycle. I've grown to love its rhythm. By the way, I'm 44. I realize I'm not 43 anymore. Oops. Don't look forward to getting my period. That's not what I mean necessarily, but I've come to deeply honor the mood that it brings. I listen to my body more. I allow the inward pull. I create rituals around my cycle, pausing when I bleed, releasing what's ready to go, and I prepare for the energy of a new month. I don't shame the quieter, more internal parts of myself anymore. I welcome them, and I rest when I can, and I create when the energy returns. And the cyclical nature has become one of my greatest teachers. This is spirituality. I don't go to a religious organization to do this. It's literally a practice of honoring myself, my body. It creates a frequency, one of love. Love your God with all your mind, with all your heart, with all your soul. Yeah, that's me. And this is opposite of these old paradigm views that see the body as a sinful, dirty entity, you know, that somehow I'm like a manipulative woman who you watch on the Disney movies and like all the bad witches and what they do. And I'm like so over this story already that vilifies our bodies. So during my healing process and deep inner work, I acknowledge part of my rupture with spiritual awareness was this relationship with the divine. And part of this lack of respect around my lunar cycle and this disdain and disgust that females in my lineage held towards their period. If the divine is fractal, right, and we embody the divine, then this backwards way of thinking is sacrilege, or more, it's in a frequency of disconnection and fear. It's the opposite of love. So I started to research how I could heal this. And really, through meditation and prayer, I stumbled upon this book in a bookstore I visited on a family vacation trip, and it was called Moon Mother, Moon Daughter. And it was filled with goddess stories and feminine wisdom around the initiation rites that mothers can hold for their pubescent daughters. And I realized that I had struck gold. I wanted her experience around her bleed and her tether to Mother Earth and the divine feminine to be different. I wanted her initiation into womanhood to be sacred and intentional. And I wanted to surround her with the kind of support and reverence that I never had. So over the course of a year, she and I read this book together. We read it slowly, intentionally, when I had time to carve out in our busy schedules, because they were crazy busy. And the book was on my nightstand, even when I didn't have time to open it. Its presence was just there, planting the seed of this feminine self-awareness and spiritual connection by my side, where I laid my head on my pillow and dreamed every night. So I gave myself even permission to not even have to rush this process, that I didn't have to accomplish reading this book in a week or a day, but a year, truly a year. And when one night I even visualized, I remember it just came to me. I was like, oh my God, I was writing to the women who had known my daughter over the years as she grew. And they were friends, they were mentors, family members. And I asked them to write letters to her. So this kind of came, I don't remember if I was meditating or if it was in a dream, but I was so inspired that I wrote letters to people who knew her. And it was so cool. They responded. I asked them to write her and they did. Their letters were filled with their own stories, their own wisdom and their advice. And it was so cool how everyone went above and beyond my request, as if they were so honored to be included in this passage. And that I knew for most of them was something their mothers never marked as a significant time for them either. So some of them even included small gifts like crystals. She got some jewelry, different tokens of meaning that were symbolic to a person. And the responses just really moved me. I collected everything in this beautiful goddess box that I had bought, and I filled it with these treasures as the letters came trickling in, knowing that one day we would open them. And I made this quiet vow to myself that when the day came, I would stop everything to honor. When that day did arrive, it was early summertime. I pulled out the box. I gathered my daughter and my son, and I took them to the downtown mall here in Charlottesville, and we ate a late lunch at a cozy cafe, and her younger brother was there too. He didn't really understand what was happening, but he knew it was special. It was important. It was a celebration. So he was just happy to be included in this rite of passage. And we had done some for him, actually, another story. So it was really cool to see this like full circle family time that honored her with this box that she received. We opened it together, letter by letter, gift by gift. There were tears and smiles and laughter and long pauses as we soaked it all in. And I could just feel how seen she was, how truly touched it was. It wasn't just about getting her period. It was about being honored for who she is, and that more than just her mother cared. She had this sisterhood that she was coming into. And she would read stories about their own teenage initiations. And she giggled in dismay a lot of it. She was still in all of her girliness, which was so cute to see. And she was encouraged for what her body is capable of and how much these women appreciated being women, and that they were holding space for her to become a woman in her own way, in her own time. So that day was one of the most meaningful days of my life. Not just for her, but for the part of me that never had a ceremony, or the part of me that never had a box, never had a story or a hand held. Through her initiation, I got to rewrite mine. And because healing is never just personal, it echoes backwards and forwards across the generations. So every time we choose to do something with intention, with love, we're not only creating something new, we're healing something old. And this is the quantum field. This is the new paradigm. So being spiritual, it means to bridge the unseen forces. That's it. To bridge the invisible. So while honoring my daughter's first bleed allowed me to reclaim a rite of passage that I had never received, it deepened my understanding of how crucial it is to mark thresholds with reverence. Honor and presence. Just, you know, where your awareness goes, your energy flows, the biology flows. So especially the ones, these thresholds that shape us before we even have words, when we're talking about birth, how important it is to be intentional around birth. Because if menstruation is a gateway into womanhood, birth is the first and most profound initiation we all pass through on earth. And yet this sacred moment when a soul takes its first breath in a human body is so often stripped of its spiritual context. And as we begin to explore these shifting paradigms of early human consciousness through this podcast, we must confront a startling reality that for much of modern history, newborns were not seen as conscious beings. Their first moments, which should be honored as holy, have instead been marked by medicalization, separation, and often trauma. And this contrast between what birth could be and what it has become reveals a deep cultural forgetting, one that this field of pre and perinatal psychology and now quantum biology and consciousness in this new era is helping us to remember, repair, and reclaim. So these are the moments we recreate for people through our services at the Flower of Life. And I just want to thank you for listening. I know I'll probably insert here a story from a woman who was very much like me, had no idea that birth didn't matter. And I showed up as her birth specialist postpartum and did a lot of work with her family, and it changed their lives forever. And I'm going to share her testimony. And I look forward to releasing episode 3. You're going to get to meet my partner, Emily, with Rebel Shift Childhood. And we are going to get into the inner child journey. So we really hope that you continue listening. And if you like the podcast, share it, subscribe to the channel, and we'll see you in future.
If there's something you resonated with on today's podcast and you are looking to change the way you birth or you're preparing for birth ahead, you can check out our services page. If you scroll down to birth and doula services, you will notice the different educational paradigms that we offer at the Flower of Life that are really holistic in the modeling of how we view pregnancy. And there's so much to learn here. So if you want to explore that and look at our services that are listed under there with birth portal preparation, understanding ancestral birth wisdom, what happens when the baby descends over the sacrum, lots of different ways to do different work to prepare yourself for a holistic birth. So we do invite you to explore our website more.